episode of Be Freaking Awesome. I am one of your hosts, Sammy Kinnison, here with Angela Belford and two very special guests. Our very first three-peat, third-time returning guest is Dr. Mikkel Harris and her partner, Janet William Wright. We are super excited to be able to chat with you guys about a new project you have coming up. But Angela, I know you want to just take a moment real quick and express some gratitude for both of them being here today.
Yeah, for sure. Dr. Mikkel and I met on like an online boot camp for list building a couple of years ago, you know, and shout out to Amy Porterfield for, you know, doing great work. Anyway, and so I reached out and I was like, I want to talk about grief, which is funny because 4 years ago, like my therapist would say, you need to address your unresolved grief. And I'm like, no, that's not it. Let's not talk about that. So it's so funny, so entertaining that I'm like, yes, let's talk about grief now. And now I kind of we have our own resident grief expert. Anytime I want to talk about grief, we invite Dr. Mikkel back. So we've had her talk about generally about grief and then kids and grief in episode 65 to help how to navigate and talk through death with children, which is super helpful. And I've been able to refer that as a resource to people. And then now we're going to talk about something that I think is super unaddressed, and that is grief in the workplace. And we spend so much of our time, like the statistics on how much of our life we spend at work is insane. So I'm super pumped. If you can be excited and nerdy about talking about grief in January, I've recently, you know, I've been saying that January is kind of the most depressing month of the year. There's just like the post-holiday blues for me. So come on, let's dive in. Let's feel some feelings and let's talk about why we need to address grief in the workplace. So thank you and welcome. Janet and Dr. Mikkel, will you guys kick it off? One of you tell us about what your project is and what you guys are doing.
Yeah, first of all, thank you for allowing both of us to be here. It's great to be part of this great group of folks and just to have a chance to do a three-peat. I loved our time together before, and I'm just really grateful for today. So I am Dr. Mikkel Harris. I'm a licensed psychologist who specializes in grief and loss, and I never thought I would be saying that at the beginning of my career. However, life in its infinite, beautiful, and frustrating ways shifted me into a space of loss following the death of my mom in December 2012. And ever since then, I've made it my personal mission as a licensed psychologist to shine light on something that's not necessarily sexy, but is necessary. And last year, I had the chance to meet Janet, and that led us to create a brand new company called Bloomwell Partners. So that's my story, and I'll punt it over to Janet.
Thank you, Mikkel. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Sammy and Angela. My name is Janet Willem-Wright. I am a social policy expert, organizational change leader. I've been an executive for the better part of 5 years. I similarly did not think that I would be a grief educator or grief awareness advocate, but my mom died when I was 18. And since then, I, like you, Angela, basically did not want to talk about my grief. I really didn't. I avoided it for a long time. And in 2020, that was the 25th anniversary of her death. And I wanted to do something to mark that pretty big milestone. And so I started a project called the Mother Love Project, which is a global platform for motherless daughters. And since launching in 2020, I've had over 130 women contribute their stories to the project about losing their moms, about anticipatory grief, about secondary losses. And that was what led to me being able to meet Mikkel. We did an online, a live IG live on Instagram last year. We had such a good time. I felt such a connection to Mikkel. And over the last year, we've come together to join forces, me with my corporate experience in sort of change management and leadership development, and Mikkel as a licensed psychologist specializing in grief and loss. And Bloomwell Partners was born this past summer.
Very cool. So what specifically does Bloomwell Partners do or provide for people?
Yeah. So we, Bloomwell Partners, is a consulting and training education firm that sole purpose is to sort of invest time in leaders, managers and leaders within organizations around the world to help promote grief literacy, shift cultural thinking with regard to grief and loss, and adjust policies and procedures as needed so that grieving employees, when they do return to work, are really in a place where their grief can be witnessed. And it's really embedded within the fabric of the organization. And so it's totally customizable services that we offer. So we have created a proprietary framework, a training sequence that we walk organizations through. And really one of our favorite parts is that it's not just a knowledge-based or education-based approach. It's really the hands-on through the process of monthly support calls where we can actually talk with leaders, find out what's happening in their specific organizations, and really tailor that so that leaders and managers can really address their own discomfort as well as develop some specific practical tools to speak with employees. So it's a wonderful, comprehensive training program.
And just to add to that, one of the things that I have found in working with leaders in various corporate spaces is they are dealing with a level of complexity now post-pandemic that I think many leaders did not think that they were going to be facing, were ill-equipped to deal with, and now they are really seeing their own skills gaps, their own competency gaps, their own knowledge gaps. And this is where Mikael and I come in. And it's not just about addressing physical loss or the death of a colleague in the workspace. Loss is so much broader than that. We talk about infertility. We talk about miscarriage, pregnancy loss, divorce. These are major life events that everyone is dealing with, and they're bringing these traumas and grief and difficulties into the workplace. And the idea that we would leave those at the door, proverbial door, when we come to the workplace is really difficult and not reasonable that we would expect people to do that. We're human beings. When we show up at work, we need that support from our management team and from our colleagues as well so that we can effectively reintegrate. And that is the approach that we take to our management training.
I love that. I think that there's so much I feel about sort of the old leaders and kind of old styles that it was just business, the work. As if I was a manager, I'm just caring about your productivity levels. Do you have questions about your work? All of these things. And not only is it actually good for productivity to care about people, but it's also just good for the world to care about people around you and to care, to be a manager, taking care of the people on your team and providing those spaces, especially like if people need the numbers to know why it's important to care, those exist out there, that taking care of people is going to be better for retention, it's better for recruitment, it's better for team morale. And also it still is a good thing to do just because it's a good thing to do to take care of your people. I love what you guys are doing and giving skills because I think a lot of people, myself included, are very aware of the gap between where we are and where we'd like to be to help support the people we manage.
Well, and I think traditionally when employees have returned to work, myself included, so I can share my own personal journey, but I think that when employees return to work, what's traditionally been done is that they are outsourced, for example, to like an employee assistance program. And certainly EAPs are a beautiful resource. They certainly have their place. At the same time, that sort of transition to an outsourced model can really stigmatize the grieving employee and make them feel even more isolated, as opposed to how can we really have this conversation knowing that, you know, I am going to be in this office 8 to 5. And EAP, while a great resource, is not going to be the primary environment that I'm in all day. So we've got to get comfortable having conversations about loss so that people feel normalized and that their grief is actually witnessed within the workplace. Very powerful.
Can you explain what that means, your grief is witnessed? Because I do have enough left brain and I have enough 20 years fighting, talking about grief that I'm going to, sounds like, play the devil's advocate today. Cause even though I'm a big fan of feeling your feelings, I know for a long time it wasn't. So yeah. Tell me, what does that mean? Grief witnessed.
Yeah, I think so. Traditionally, like, we live in a society that is heavily grief avoidant, right? Mm-hmm. When someone comes in to work on a Monday, we're like, oh, how was your weekend? Great. How was yours? Fine. Everything's fine. But when someone comes in and says, you know what? My mom died. It's crickets, right? There's a discomfort in the space. And what that can do to the person who's grieving is make them feel isolated. It can make them feel very alone in the workplace and misunderstood. And that, coupled with other things, can really help that person sort of distance themselves, which can lead to them eventually leaving. And then there's a whole host of consequences in terms of what it costs to replace an employee who leaves. So grief witnessing is literally that. It's shining a light and naming that elephant in the room and not skirting around the fact that this has happened. It's witnessing the grief, because we know that when we don't do that, sort of in the psychology world, we say this phrase, and that's our secrets keep us sick. And that in the same thing can be true in the workplace. When we don't shine a light on grief, there's a sickness and a dis-ease that's developing in that culture. And that has a ripple effect, not only for the grieving employee, but for the culture of the workplace as a whole.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I worked corporate for 5 years, and I think that where I worked, there was just such an attitude and sort of, there was in talk, we would say like, oh yes, of course you might be grieving. Let's leave space for these things. But also, like, your work has to still get done.
Yeah.
And let's not take days off because we're sad about something. Let's not let it impede anything. And so it was really interesting just to see the difference between lip service, but then expectations of what actually happened with the work.
Hard. And I think part of the reason for this, to sort of look at this from a global sort of societal perspective, is that mental health, grief, in sort of under that umbrella, is anchored in a biomedical model, right? Like, you hit your toe on the bed, there's a little, you know, concern, you go to the doctor, they stitch it up, they sew it up, they patch it up, and then you look back and there's no remnant. The scar's gone, the swelling's decreased. And the truth is, it's like, we can't really frame grief or mental health in that way, right? We've got to look at this as something that's invisible, that while there may not be a visible scar, there are still remnants of this pain that's going to linger for over time. And so I think part of what we are hoping to do at Bloomwell, but even beyond Bloomwell, is just educate that grief is invisible and it's not biomedical. Like, we've got to look at this as a lifelong process. So when an employee comes back to work, yes, it's great to sort of witness that, express condolences, but we need that beyond the first week, beyond the first month, beyond the first year, because we know that this is a long-term process for that employee.
Well, and grief is not linear. I think that's the other thing.
That's right.
Interesting you say the week and the month and the year, is because, I mean, I've talked to people that are like, oh, you know, the illness was so drawn out that I just feel relief.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I understand that.
Yeah.
And you may open the mailbox and you may see something that is addressed to Mr. and Mrs. Mm-hmm. And it may kick, grief can kick you in the gut when you least expect it. You're going along and things are fine. And then all of a sudden, like, it just can take your breath away. And I remember losing a friend my sophomore year of college, and I was the one that had stayed home that Labor Day weekend. Mm-hmm. And so I was the one notifying all of our friends as they came back into town. And then over the next few days, I just remember, and luckily I'd just been in therapy for several months before this, that I remember it feeling exactly like the wave idea, you know, where it would just hit you hard and knock you down and then it would recede, and you had to, like, almost have the patience with it to just go like, yep, it's going to knock me down. That doesn't mean I'm going to be knocked down forever. For me,
that's right.
I think that was my fear, is I was like, if I start crying, I'll never stop.
Right. Same.
So I have to like keep this push down, because if I start, then it'll just never end. And it does end.
That's right.
It gets different and it changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the more that managers are aware of the ebbs and flows of grief and the non-linearity of it, that positions them to be able to talk to employees within that frame, right? So that if an employee is sitting there, as I was after my mom died, in front of a classroom, and I'm looking out at my students, and one of my students has the same name as my mom, and all of a sudden tears are welling up years after her death, that makes sense. And we've got to anchor that in a normal fashion, as opposed to thinking, oh my gosh, what's going on with the employee, right? We need to have a conversation about something else behind closed doors. No, we need to normalize that. We need to say that we were actually anticipating this. We were waiting for this to show up, as opposed to making it feel like a stigma for that employee.
And there's a level of confidence. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Sammy.
Nope. Go ahead, Janet.
I was just going to say, there's a level of confidence that managers can learn through our training, through participating in these kind of grief education practices that helps them to really position themselves to be proactive and not be reactive and be caught off guard. And I think that confidence, as it builds, it really spills out into other areas of leadership as well. Mm-hmm. This is about broader emotional intelligence, and these are transferable skills. Mm-hmm. And so I think while we're talking about grief and loss as part of this framework, it really is about leveling up the emotional intelligence of the managers that go through our program. And that is such a fundamental skill that really progressive organizations know they need to build into their leadership development pipelines. We all know this. Many organizations don't. They think that's those are soft skills. Those are not soft skills. Those are critical 21st century management skills.
Yes, core skills.
Yeah, core skills. They are core competencies. And really good, healthy, progressive organizations know that.
You mentioned sort of managers that can be proactive instead of reactive.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
My question is, what prompts an organization to reach out to you all? What have you found? I would hypothesize it is probably reactive. It is probably something has happened and we need help and support. Why should somebody, what are the reasons that people are reaching out?
Well, so organizations don't know what they don't know. And it's been really interesting throughout this year to have conversations to discuss BloomWell, because I think a lot of organizations are sort of in the mindset, well, number one, we can't see the financial benefit yet, right? And so it's hard to have a conversation that's proactive when we haven't experienced, or we don't, actually every organization has experienced this. It's just that it may not have been brought to the surface. So that's been a little bit of an uphill climb. But one of the things that Janet and I have been more strategic about is really aligning with those organizations that already fundamentally understand that emotional intelligence, psychological safety, and organizational culture and well-being are absolutely critical to every aspect of the job. And if you want employees to be more productive, these are the skills that are necessary. So we have been more strategic around that. For the organizations that get it, I think what they're wanting is really fundamental, like really a basic understanding of sort of what is grief and how might this manifest in the workplace? What are the signs that I might notice with a grieving employee to know, oh, I need to reach out and have this specific conversation? And I'm sure, Janet, you can add more to that too.
Absolutely. Organizations that have mental health and wellness programs, I think this is a really nice component to add into that strategy. It's another fantastic tool to have in your organizational toolbox. We have seen an uptick in conversations around bereavement leave, particularly around Grief Awareness Day. So organizations that potentially have leaders in their organizations who have lost a family member and realize our bereavement leave is way too short. This mm-hmm. is another component to discussing what your organizational policies and procedures are beyond just a bereavement leave, which is one mm-hmm. tool in the toolbox. Mm-hmm. There are organizations that, you know, have had employees die in service and have felt completely ill-equipped to support their teams to deal with the grief that they feel about losing a colleague. So there's that, but also globally, people are struggling to talk about what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening in Ukraine. There is enormous mm-hmm. grief from diaspora communities. So mm-hmm. we certainly are seeing organizations reach out to talk about these really crucial global issues as well, and how to position their managers well to have those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, sorry, all of this is just making me think about even like, you know, the individual grief that you might have. I think I'm not 100% sure what secondary grief is, but you mentioned that earlier. This might be it. I remember my second year working for this company, we did a team building retreat and we were doing like an escape room. And while we were in the escape room, one of my colleagues got a phone call that her husband had fallen and was being taken in an ambulance. Mm. And later that day ended up passing away.
Oh,
and it
goodness.
Ended up being just such an impactful and hard moment for everybody, that not only like the team building was not very team building-y after that. Yeah. We also put escape rooms officially on the like, nope, we're not going to book those anymore.
Yeah.
List. We had new people who had joined the organization a couple years later and they're like, we should do an escape room. They're so much fun. And I was like, nope, I will not. Like I was in the group that was approving those things. And that team member was still there who had lost her husband. And I was like, nope, I will stand for this. It is, I feel like it's her story to get to share. And mm-hmm. I'm going to stand up. Like you may not understand why, but we cannot do escape rooms anymore.
Yeah.
With this team in this context.
Yeah. And so what you're describing is sort of a grief trigger, right? That escape mm-hmm. room has been now associated with that phone right. call and that subsequent yes. death. A secondary loss. Here's an example. Let's say someone gets divorced. And so there's the death of that relationship. Mm-hmm. Then that relationship was also linked to other friendships in the community, you know, other couples and so forth. Well, as a result of the divorce, a secondary loss would be also now a loss of friendships, community connections, opportunities to be involved in certain things because they're all connected to that original primary loss, which is the divorce. And so that is super common with people who grieve any sort of loss, is that there's going to be the primary and then all these secondary losses, which just compound right. the grief process as a whole. So in the workplace, that might look like my spouse died and I lost that income. That's a secondary loss, right? So then that has an impact on the job. Even though I need time off, I've got to work because I have kids. I've got to pay bills. And so there's all of these ripple effects that can occur. And that's what we really want managers to understand, that this is not just, and I'm sorry for your loss the day the person returns. This is a complex consideration of these the primary and secondary losses so that we can offer the comfort and the support that the employee needs in the short and long run.
Mm-hmm. And having just, if I can add to that, having just been through the holiday season, there is an expectation for joy. There's an expectation mm-hmm. for, this is the happiest time of year. For many yeah. people, it is not the happiest time of year. It is That's loss right. of tradition. It is loss of connection. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, difficulty finding joy. And so mm-hmm. I think there is an awareness that needs to be built into these seasons where we're not forcing fun and we're not forcing joy. And we're recognizing yeah. and acknowledging this could be a difficult time of year for you. And if it is, let me know.
Yeah. And to piggyback on that, at the beginning of this new year, you know, it's like, for a lot of people, this is goal setting and okay, let's look forward. But to the person who's experienced the loss, it's a reminder that it is another year of experiencing the significant transition. And that's overwhelming and devastating for a lot of folks. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's It's fascinating to me. And I'm in a, I think I'm in a weird, different place. Those of you that are longtime listeners of the podcast know that I typically start writing books under duress from, you know, God telling me I have to for the first time in a long time. I'm actually, oh, this is interesting. I have a book idea. My friend, our number one episode of our the podcast is called It's Okay to Die, where we interviewed my friend Nathan Wainwright, and he shared his experience. And he also asked me to write his book. And so we recorded while he was still healthy. We recorded. And now I'm, now that he has passed, I am starting to work on his book called It's Okay to Die. So I'm in a very interesting, reflective place. And one of the things he said is humans have a 100% mortality rate. There's two people that we have, you know, if you are a follower, you know, and you believe the Bible, there are two people who escape death.
That's it.
Yeah, those, they, in the stories that they were, you know, ascended into heaven without, I mean, even Jesus didn't escape death, right? And so 100% mortality rate. And we avoid this. We avoid the topic. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to plan our funerals. We don't want to, plan, you know, do our wills. We don't want to do any of these things. And yet it is guaranteed.
That's the one known.
It is the one guaranteed. Known. I'm guaranteed. And I'm also, you know, so I'm helping, I'm writing his book, and then I'm starting the research on my third actual book, which will be about abandonment. And I was like, you know, I've got to practice, work on not believing that everyone will always leave me. And I have a friend that looked at me and goes, but they will.
But they will.
They will, because they're going to, everybody's going to die. Either you're going to leave or they're going to leave. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this is on the podcast on Be Freaking Awesome. But I think that the idea of the concept to Be Freaking Awesome is to be wholehearted. It is to be fully and completely awake to your humanity. And it is to be fully engaged in all aspects of it. And I literally, as I got to, and gosh, I haven't even, it's been too fresh for me to even talk about it on the podcast. But as I walked those last weeks with Nathan and Chrissy, and I said, we really got to help his body leave the earth. Right. Because he was not really all himself after about August. And so for September and October, it was just this transition process. And it was, I mean, it was beautiful. You know, Chrissy's workplace, they were able to get her on family medical leave so that she could be a caretaker and give her lots of support and everything. And they also, all of her coworkers, they took turns. They had a calendar where they sent her a card every single week.
Beautiful.
Someone sent her an actual physical greeting card. And it was such a, she works remotely. It was such a tangible way for people to help her through this grief process. She's a person who, after he passed, like 2 weeks later, she's like, y'all, she and I worked a lot on the grief recovery process while he was passing. Anyway, so it was this beautiful time to get to like walk through this process. Also really heavy and very hard. And also for me, when I think of secondary loss, it was very like, yes, he was my friend. And there was, I was walking with my friend through death. I was walking with my friend through her husband's death. I was also there so that their son wouldn't be alone. So my friend could have a break. And so like, and I, my mom died of cancer when I was a little kid. And so there was just so much, so many layers to this. And I had a hard time. There were a couple of times where it was like 2 weeks later, I would be like, why am I so like, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Monday and I'm having to take a nap. And everybody's like, on Mondays, you went to be with Nathan. Of course you're going to be tired. Of course you're going to be. And it was so weird because it didn't feel like it was happening to me. It wasn't my husband. It wasn't my brother. It wasn't my, and yet it was.
It was.
And I was so honored to be a part of the process with them. I mean, it is like one of the most impactful processes of my life. And yet also I didn't have language to explain this thing is happening. Luckily, the people around me are super emotionally aware. And they're like, of course you're having a hard time on Mondays. Of course you need to take. And I work from home. So I went and took a nap, 15 minutes, 15 minute nap. And I like perked back up and was able to finish my work day, you know? Yeah. So anyway, I just want to like anything anybody is feeling, whether you are like, whew, I'm good. I've released it. I'm relieved. Yes. And if you're like swimming through, walking through like quicksand, yes. And if you are like sad in the morning and you're better in the afternoon, or happy in the morning and sad in the afternoon, yes.
Yes.
It is all yes. Just honor that. Honor that.
Yes.
This is how I feel today, because I think we want to discount it and we want to ignore the 100% mortality rate that we have. So I hope that your work not only becomes corporate, but also becomes culture.
Yes.
To develop a culture of grief literacy.
Yes.
Well, and here's the interesting thing to your point earlier, Angela, the number of hours we spend in the workplace, right?
Yes.
So the workplace is just a little microcosm of the bigger world, right? So
absolutely.
What we fundamentally believe with Bloomwell is that as we sort of focus in the corporate space, there will also be beautiful ripple effects out into these people's homes, families, communities, and larger society. And that really is critical. I mean, if we can sort of wrap our mind around everything that you just said, I mean, just imagine how much more compassionate, how much more gracious and tender that we would be in this thing called life, because we're all headed there. And so we've got to wrap our minds around that. Yeah. My dad, before he died, used to always say, you know what, this is great every birthday. This is great. I'm one step closer to, you know, to death. And we were like, but it's your birthday. But I mean, it was just his acknowledgement of the reality. It wasn't a sour comment. It was like, I'm one step closer. And that's a great thing, right? I can bring all this wisdom and joy and adventure into the next season. So,
yeah.
It's the one known.
And this is part of our work as grief educators. This really is building a movement of grief literacy. And I think that's what you were talking about, Angela, as well, and not avoiding or denying what is inevitable, but embracing it and being able to talk about it honestly and being proactive in our own lives. One of the things that my mom's death taught me was to be really proactive about my own will and estate planning, to get life insurance, to protect my children and my partner, because that was not something that my parents did. They put their heads in the sand. They denied that my mom was dying. They didn't talk about it. They refused to acknowledge what was the inevitability of her death. And it caused enormous trauma to my brother and I, beyond my mother's actual physical death. That there was such a denial of what was actually happening and no forward thought about what was going to happen after she died. So as a mother myself, I have become quite fixated on making sure that everybody knows if I am hit by a bus tomorrow, this is what happens. This is what we're going to do. These are our financial plans, because we have to be able to have these conversations in our families. To prepare not only ourselves, but our loved ones for what could happen. And it's not to be scary and it's not to be afraid. It's to have emotionally mature conversations about exactly that, our 100% mortality rate. We just want to put it off and put it off and put it off and pretend that it's not going to happen, or that it, you know, couldn't possibly happen now, but we know that it does. So this is part of what our work is as well.
Yeah. And one of the things that we, Janet and I, were strategic about in our training sequence was to shine a light inward, right? So this is not just a didactic. We're not just talking about the grieving employee. We're talking about all of us. And so as we're working with leaders, we are encouraging them to really self-reflect, right? And think about their own mortality and to really try to pivot that. It's not just the condolences outward, but how can we reflect inward on death and what that means for you, what's coming up for you as a leader, because really it's that truth that arises that's going to benefit the grieving employee, right? The more they can see you as another human being, not just a leader, not a top-down conversation, literally just another human being who's also struggling and wrestling and navigating, that's going to forge that camaraderie that we want to see in an organization that's functioning well.
I feel like this was something that I got the opportunity to practice with my in-laws this past year at Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And the practice that I did around my in-laws is something that could absolutely be applied by managers in the space. My husband, last Christmas, he had all four grandparents still around, and he lost his grandpa. So the first of his grandparents just before Christmas last year. Mm-hmm. So this Thanksgiving was the very first Thanksgiving without him, and really the first like family gathering without Grandpa Bobby. And I walked into the space welcoming grief, and I talked about it. And as somebody who is the most distant person from Grandpa Bobby, as the in-law, granddaughter-in-law, I opened up the conversation and invited. And so I actually had an opportunity to sit down with Chris's grandma and asked her, how has this past year been without Grandpa Bobby? And then her and I had the opportunity to talk for like 30, 40 minutes about it's been hard. And she was like, I'm ready to let go and to keep taking steps forward. I know that he will always be with me. And I know that I can come back to him. She was like, I have his stuff on the shelf and I can go visit the shelf anytime I want. And I want to keep taking steps forward. And I don't feel that I've done that this year. And I felt that was even just the opportunity for me.
It's beautiful.
I invited her to talk to me. Yes. I didn't do it in such a way that it was like, tell me how your year has been. Like, you know, here's a just mandated conversation.
Open-ended. Absolutely.
And it was something that my husband was like, I think I would have been too afraid to have asked her that question. Like, what if it's too hard for her? What if it's too hard for me? And I think people are waiting. They want that invitation more often than not.
They want it so much.
To be able to share. That's right. I feel like one of our goals in life is to be seen and to see others, and right. to be seen by somebody is such a beautiful gift to receive and a beautiful gift to give.
Absolutely. So
even if it's not in the workplace, it can be in your families. Mm-hmm. If you're like, I'm not in this corporate world that's going to, you know, book Bloomwell Partners and have you guys come in. There are still opportunities to use this grief literacy everywhere.
Right. That's right. Kids.
Your families, your work, your colleagues, whether you're a manager or not.
I think one of the greatest myths from those who are supporting people who are grieving is, I've been told this, like, I don't want to bring up your mom, Mikael, because I don't want you to be sad. And I love to sort of have those conversations to let them know, whether you bring her up or not, I'm thinking of her 24/7, 365. It's been 11 years, as of three days ago. But you bringing her up gives me the space to share about the fact that she lived, what a beautiful human being she was, who my dad was. And so really major kudos to you, Sammy, for just inviting your in-law into that conversation, because you probably freed her from the strain of hiding at a Thanksgiving gathering, right? You gave her permission to talk about something that she's already thinking about anyway. Really beautiful.
Yeah. I love that. And that's the piece that Mikael was mentioning before about the witnessing. We think about it as this big scary thing, and managers want to say, well, I'm not a mental health expert and I can't do this. But in fact, these are very basic skills that we can teach anybody, and we do teach them. And so what you've done is just created this beautiful space of remembrance. And I'm the same. My mom has been dead 28 years almost, and very few people after maybe 5 years would ask me about her. And even today, the opportunity to talk about her and share memories is something that fills me with joy, because I don't get that chance very often. And so I'll take it anywhere I can. And that's a really beautiful thing to offer somebody. Absolutely.
That's awesome. Well, we like to wrap up the episodes with a final question. What would you like to leave us with? So we'll give you guys both an opportunity to final thoughts.
I will. That's such a great question. I remember this from our last convo. I was stumped then. I'm almost done now. I love this Jon Kabat-Zinn. It's the title of one of his books, which is Wherever You Go, There You Are. And I love that. And of course, we could sort of look at that as physically, wherever you go, there you are. But I think as it pertains to grief, like wherever grief is taking you, there you are. Mm-hmm. And that we owe it to ourselves to be where grief is and to follow its lead. Yes, it is overwhelming and scary and confusing, anger provoking. It's also potentially very beautiful. And so to embrace that wherever it goes, there you are. And that can bode you well to be in that now.
Well, that is a tough act to follow. I would say I want organizations to understand that this is a prime opportunity to position themselves as a workplace of choice, and to understand that compassionate grief-informed leadership is where employees want you to be right now, not 5 years from now. So I'll say that, and I will also say, to echo Mikhail's comment, that we can make grief our friend. And for all of us, that may be our life's work, is to understand how to befriend our grief and to walk with our grief, and not to be afraid of it. So there is magic in that.
I want to wrap up with a kind of an excerpt from what will be in the book, It's Okay to Die. And Nathan said, the lesson that gives me the most joy is that the world goes on. We hurt, we grieve, we take a step forward. We hurt, we grieve, we take a step forward. We hurt, we grieve a little less, we take a step forward. We hurt a little less, we grieve a little less, we take a step forward. Until one day we find ourselves taking steps forward, remembering our loss sometimes, remembering the joy we had with those we lost, taking another step forward, and knowing that every step we take forward is a gift that God has given us, and every memory is something to be cherished. Those are gifts God has given as well.
So powerful. So powerful.
Well, really beautiful.
Where could people find Bloomwell Partners if they're like, I'm in, I'm sold, I need to see what resources you have available? How can they get in touch?
Yeah, the first thing that they do. Oh, go ahead, Janet. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, we're at growwithbloomwell.com. Mm-hmm. That is our website, and anyone can reach us through our website. All of our contact information is there. Mm-hmm. Mikhail, do you want to add on to that?
That's exactly what I was going to say. If you are just dying to know how to get a hold of us right now and don't have time to go to the website, you can send us an email at bloomwellpartners@gmail.com. And Jan and I would love to just partner with you and figure out what your organization may be needing, so that you can continue to grow. And like I said, our mission is to cultivate grief-informed organizations, one organization at a time. So thank you so much again for the space.
And may I also shout out, if you just want some just real subtle grief support. And I would highly encourage you to follow Dr. Mikkel on Instagram. It is amazing how the time I need it, I pop on Instagram and she shows up in my feed with exactly the little snippet I need or the live that I need. And so we're going to put that in the show notes again. If you need resources to talk to kids about grief, go back to episode 65 of Be Freaking Awesome. And just for our general grief discussion, with a lot of laughter, actually, I will tell you that back in the day when Josh was still here and talking to a 24 year old young man about grief, we laughed a lot in episode 33. So thank you, Dr. Mikkel, for being the first three-peat. Welcome. And Janet, so nice to get to spend this time with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you, Sam.
Everybody for being here, and thank you for listening.